Now, a Talk Radio 1210 WPHT special presentation.
It's the end of the world.
Hey, Neuro, let's put a trigger warning on trigger warnings.
I gotta take it on the other side.
And welcome into another Other Side with Dan and Dorenzo. My name being Dan Borowski with Anthony Dorenzo. From everywhere on WPHT, you see me on Dom Giordano program, you see Anthony everywhere else. And Anthony, we got a lot to talk about today, man. How you doing today?
I'm great. After the Sixers beat the damn Miami Heat for the first time, it feels like in playoff history. But right? Yeah, here we are. Here we are.
So I got to catch some of that. You know, I've been struggling here. I got a lot going on. Family coming in, so trying to clean laundry, all this stuff. In the background, though, Sixers game, and I see Nick Batum going off, man. I got to tune in. And I'm like, okay, I'm watching Nick Batum. I'm like, okay, this guy turns it around out of nowhere. And then meanwhile, you have Tobias Harris trying to make a layup and getting 5 rebounds, which was nice for me because I had a parlay of 6 rebounds from Tobias Harris, and he knocked it out all in one play, it seemed like. But your hopes for the Sixers, we'll start there. Sixers moving forward, are you actually hopeful for this team, or where do you stand?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I'll continue to say it, like it's a year where there isn't a dominant overall number one team. You know, I'm not trying to downplay the Celtics. I understand they've been better this year and they've been healthier in general, so they will be better just by translation. But either way, like, I just think whether it's looking at the West or the East, like, you can't really count anyone fully out right now. And the Sixers are getting hot at absolutely the right time. Maxey and Embiid look so locked in. And if we could get guys like Batum, hopefully Buddy Hield and the rest of the bench kind of mixed in there the way that they should be, I mean, sky is the limit. Obviously, you brought up Tobias and he's missing a lot of shots, which I'm sure people were really focused in on even more yesterday because it was Jimmy Butler there who replaced him technically. So, you know, I mean, is it a guarantee? No, not at all. But I think this is the best shot the Sixers have had in a very long time. And I mean, it's the most healthy Embiid has been going into.
So it's
playoffs.
A sign of a weaker East than it is a better Sixers team, right? You got Doc Rivers with an injured Giannis sitting there with the Bucks. You have the Celtics, who are a great regular season team and what looks to be a super team if you look at the roster on paper, but then they get to the playoffs every year and it just, something fails.
Yeah.
So is it just the path is easier for the Sixers, or is the Sixers team better now than in recent years?
I mean, I think they are better, and the East is weaker in general, but I do think this is just the most healthy Embiid has been and the most like synchronized they've been. I mean, Maxey and Embiid together, the chemistry they've had of late has been special. And you need things like that if you're going to go on a run. Yeah. You know?
It's exciting, though. So playing a game yesterday, that means Bad Bunny does get to have his concert tomorrow at the Wells Fargo. I don't know if you saw that. That was in threatened of being canceled if they lost the game. But one of the topics that we want to get into, and we'll get to a couple other topics later, especially this one out of Maryland. There's a school shooter manifesto that I really want to hear your thoughts on it. And I actually have a take on this because it involves a transgendered student. You might be assuming that I might be going one way on this, but I want to hear your thoughts on it. But before we get there, I want to stick on basketball with Caitlin Clark, who was the first overall pick in the WNBA draft, the highest ratings of WNBA draft in history. And there's been a lot about this gender pay gap, Anthony. It turns out, news comes out today, Shams Charania expecting, hey, Mary, how you doing?
Yeah, we're getting barged in on. We're getting barged.
Shams Charania, he says it might be $20 million, the shoe deal, a Nike deal with Caitlin Clark. Where do you stand on the whole idea of the gender pay gap? Do you recognize it as a reality? And do you think there's a way to solve it? Or is it just how nature works? Like, where do you stand on the whole topic?
I mean, the entire issue as a whole is pretty ridiculous, in my opinion. I think it comes up every year just because, you know, they want to talk about how women's sports isn't as rewarded. But I think once more people start watching it, I think this year was a perfect example with someone like Caitlin Clark. It showed you the possibilities of, like, if women's sports were that, I don't know, popular. And this year especially, like, with what happened in the men's tournament and how late it was, I think 9 p.m. start is kind of one of their issues of why the men's team, or excuse me, the men's championship in general had less viewers and the women's did kind of surge.
It's a late start.
But either way, this is something, I mean, it goes back to when I was in college classes and just learning about, you know, open markets and free markets. women used to complain like, oh, our volleyball team, our swim team, et cetera, we don't get the same support. We don't get the financial. Like, what you don't understand is because of the football team, because of the basketball team, because of how successful they are, you're even able to have a program because of those things. And I'm not even trying to take a shot at women here. But once women stop being so obsessed with things like the Kardashians and Bravo and like the Real Housewives, oh, like we, but that's what they like. I'm not trying to bash it, but that's, if you want equal pay, get all your girls and go out to the bar and start watching the WNBA. They just don't do that. They don't. Yeah. And it's, I'm not pulling up the numbers
here. I want to emphasize your point, because here's the attendance of WNBA games average from last season. And the highest one is the Las Vegas Aces, and Phoenix Mercury are the two probably most popular successful teams right now. 9,000, over 9,000, just over. Meanwhile, the NBA average attendance is about double, around 18,000 to 20,000. So you're right. It's supply and demand. And I'm curious where it goes, though, because you got someone like Caitlin Clark here, who's now making endorsement monies of $20 million, which reality is, compared to some men's players, that's getting up there in numbers. You know, if that's per year, I don't know if that's a year-long deal or if it's a multi-year deal, then that changes things. But one thing that came out of the whole press conference, and you sent this over, man, you want to set this up? What was this about, the Caitlin Clark being asked about by this reporter? What the hell's going on here?
Yeah, this is someone out of Indiana Times, I think, that reported this. Well, asked just a bizarre question. So you know how people do like the heart, like, you know, whatever. Oh, look at that. Look at that.
What the hell just happened?
Is that because of our streaming software? It's doing I didn't do that. I don't know why I did that. Is it going to still work? Yeah.
What is going on here?
That's all right. Well, our streaming software, they get the idea. So when you do hearts, that's what Caitlin Clark does to her family every game. And apparently a reporter also likes the heart hands and kind of verbalize that. So, yeah, listen into this.
Hi, Caitlin. Greg Doyle, Indy Star. Real quick, let me do this.
You like that?
I like that you're here.
So awkward.
I like that you're here.
I do that at my family after every game, so.
Okay, well, let's cool. Start doing it to me and we'll be able to get along just fine. So, question is...
Weird, do it to me every game? Like, first of all... Just choice of words, like chill. Yeah, and second of all, like it's creepy in general. Like what? I don't know. You could be like, oh, it's cute. You do that with your family every game. We're happy. Like there's a way more candid way to go about that.
Doesn't do it. I'm so upset. Why do you get that?
I don't know. It's good to do it again. Watch. Yeah.
You're a freaking magician, man. Since we're little girls, I think we're little girls for being so excited about this heart thing over here. Heart hands are so overdone. I agree with you. What should it be done instead? A middle finger? Just throw a middle finger out to the crowd after every. All right, so let's get into more serious topics. During the show today with Dom, the story broke, and it happened yesterday, the arrest, but now it's kind of making national news, and it's out of Montgomery County, Maryland. And it's a teenager, an 18-year-old transgender teenager named Andrea Yee. I think Alex Yee is the dead name. I can't really figure that out with the reporting. But it's an individual who identifies as transgender, was found to have written a 129-page, quote, manifesto that details a school shooting that they wanted to perform on their school, mentioning in this manifesto that even elementary school would be an easy target. So it goes down this whole path, and there's reporting out there, especially in conservative outlets, that transgender student arrested after 129 page manifesto suggests school shooting. But the defense of the student, and at the top of the manifesto slash what Washington Post angles it as a quote memoir, is a disclaimer that says, "This is a work of fiction. All the names, characters, business, places, events, and incidents in this book are either the product of the author's imagination or used in a fictitious manner. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, or actual events is purely coincidental. This is not the threat of violence, nor does it represent the author's belief." And just a quote from like the book, whose main character is Jimmy Wang, James Wang, a transgender student, who a lot of similarities between Yee and the main character. Quote, "As I walk through the hallways, I cherry-pick the classrooms that are the easiest targets." He also writes, "I've also considered shooting up my former elementary school because little kids make easier targets. FBI has now taken this person into custody and charged them." with potential a single count of a threat of mass violence. So, Anthony, my question becomes, because I've had one very hardline stance on most trans issues, but when it comes to this, a Sid says Wang, that's what he got out of all that. But when it comes to a memoir, as they're framing it, Washington Post, or a manifesto, as the right is framing it, is there a defense here, in your opinion, from the student by arguing that it's a fictional piece that they wrote? A little more context behind it. I don't know if you've read into it, but this student has served time in mental institutions, and red flags have been raised about violent past postings on social media and all, also referencing school shootings and all. So I don't know. This might be a case where, they should be held accountable, no doubt. But is there a line? Would this set a precedent that anything school shooting can't be written about fictionally? Where do you stand with it?
I mean, I'm all for free speech and freedom and things like that. But even me as like a music fan and like a hip hop fan, the fact that like some rappers can just talk openly about like murders they've had, and label it as art, like, I think that's a little ridiculous. And I feel like this is kind of under the same precedent. Like, here's one quote I have up from this. "I want to shoot up my school. I've been preparing for it for the past few months. As I sit in front of my dad's gun case and stare at the sleek black gun inside, all I can think about is my finger on the trigger, taking aim and killing people. Blah, blah, blah." Talks about how it's an AK-14, gun's going to change lives, etc. I think this whole, just the precedence behind something like this is the problem between this entire epidemic. Like, this is, these people that commit these terrible, horrific acts, like, they want to live down in history. Like, it's this, it's a psychology thing. It's like that movie, The Joker, you know, like getting in this, getting inside the mind of someone who's so sick. And whether it's us saying, oh, this is art and people can write about it, or just constantly propping up these people, talking about them 24/7, which is why partially I've had a problem with the Nashville stuff in general, because the fact that we keep bringing them up and keep saying the name and then keep bringing up the manifesto, like, I think that's exactly what these psychos want that commit these terrible things. And that's, you know,
you don't think that manifesto should be public knowledge and all out there?
I'm not saying it shouldn't be accessible.
What bothers me, though, is if it was a person who was a radical for another cause, there's no doubt that that manifesto would be out there to warn people to look out. Like this is what you got to look for for a potential for something like this to happen again. The fact that it's a transgendered individual, I feel like it's being protected, and I don't think that's really fair.
Because I can agree with that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just think it's hard. It's hard to, you know, it is a whataboutism type of thing, but I just think this is such a delicate topic. Like, we really do need to think about how it's talked about and the optics around that 24/7. Cause I think that is one reason why we continue to see it happen, because of how it is covered and the, like, you know, for lack of a better word, like, heroin that these people become and like the lore around it. It's like, it's this weird, like, I'll be in the history books.
And you're
one of like 18 people.
And they write, the person writes, they want it to be famous, is essentially why they plan the school shooting. It's it's not good. And I'm with, like, where I wonder, though, is if you have A-plus student, captain of the football team, no prior, you know, history with mental conditions, decides to put together a 150-page story about a school shooting. Would the FBI come after them? And is it fair that they came after this person? I think the line gets drawn at having the past history of mental health issues is where you look there.
Yeah. I think this is such a case by case thing. And I really do wish, you know, this is like such a red meat topic for all news outlets. And I'm not saying it's something we shouldn't talk about, but I think because of how, you know, the media swarms to any sort of issue like this, I think that's part of the problem and part of why we keep seeing it happen.
What do you think, just the general notion? Because it's definitely been turned into a political issue by conservatives. I mean, there's a huge, there's no denying that there's been a huge trend of transgenderism exploding in the country. But the conservatives have latched on and created a political issue out of it. Is that something that wins with the younger generation?
I think both parties want nothing to do with this realistically. Like, I think this is why they talk about the guns, because talking about the guns distracts from the actual issue of this, which the real issue of this is so layered and so complex that it's nearly impossible to deal with, but I shouldn't say it is impossible. It's kind of disgusting to me that we'll have armed guards at banks and, you know, warehouses around the country guarding monetary things of value. But the second we talk about having armed guards at schools and stuff like that, like, you know, people aren't all for it. Like, that's, our kids should be the number one thing we're protecting, and they're not. Nobody, I mean, we don't even really pretend to care about the kids anymore.
The idea of protection from the left, though, is to, you know, eliminate all guns.
You know, well, the whole narrative, I mean,
meanwhile, the right with the armed guards would be, let's bring more guns into the school with an armed guard. And that's something they're morally against. But
we have to preach accountability again. I think the Republicans in general need to start preaching accountability, because if they don't, then you're just lost. Like, that's how you get these people in the middle. And you need to, like, weapons are needed. We're going to need them. People get them on the black market. You could literally 3D print a gun now and go use it on the streets of Philly and carjack someone. Like, it's, we have to find a way.
Who do you blame for society's lack of accountability?
I don't know. I think we all take freedom for granted to, like, an insane extent, you know, where we're like, oh, we're so busy and, like, oh, I can't control that. That's out of my hands. Hopefully I just get home or my kids get home safe. And, you know, we see things on social media or on TV and we're like, ah, oh, that wouldn't ever happen to us. But anything could happen to any of us at all times.
Do you feel that lack of accountability exploded during the pandemic too? Because I feel like people came back to work and employees just don't want to take, you know, responsibility for mistakes, and criminals skyrocketing. And I wonder, I don't know, I had the shower thought the other day, and I hate to say this as a conservative, but how much of it is Larry Krasner not holding people accountable and progressives taking the idea of, you know, criminals should be able to live in society comfortably, or how much of it is Donald Trump? And a lot of the situations he faces, he kind of skirts by, and he's not held accountable. Not that I'm saying he needs to be held accountable, but I'm saying with especially like his relationships and all, he has affairs, and you look at a highly Christian voter base who is able to look past now holding a guy accountable for cheating on his wife. It's, you know,
well, I say
this leaning towards Trump in the election, like, I'll be completely transparent, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why people get fed up with anyone with money or in politics in general. Like, that's what I try to constantly preach. Like, all these people, you know, they get away with what we all couldn't. Like, we can't, if you're part of the working class and you don't have all the money in the world for endless lawyers and legal help, you know, you're part of that group that can be just like thrown to the gauntlet, and you have to deal with the legal system and figure it out. And, you know, I think that's why people are fed up with politics in general. It's a group of like the haves and the have nots.
Yeah.
Like, the middle class is totally like disappearing. It's still there. It's totally falling apart because everyone's so dependent paycheck to paycheck, paying back school, paying for groceries with how it is right now. But I think we are kind of slowly realizing like the implications of us all kind of becoming apathetic, especially after COVID.
So you do think there's a societal shift? How does that play out in the election if there's a recognition of our apatheticness as a society? Is it?
Well, I think a lot of people will consider Trump that didn't. And also on top of that, I think a lot of people will vote for RFK that would have.
That's
never
what I was going to say. Yeah. Well, the response to the apatheticness, I feel like, is the explosion in popularity of a third party candidate such as RFK. It's, you know, we want to hold the government accountable. Now there's a potential guy that wants to do that. That's why there's such strong support for him. Let's get into RFK. Philadelphia today, 30 Kennedy family members come down to town to endorse Biden. Anthony, your thoughts is this just a move because they hate Trump that much, or do they actually hate their brother or cousin RFK Jr.?
Are they that afraid of being targeted by the government, just like
is that
JFK
what it is?
And Bobby Sr.? Is that what it is?
Or
I don't know,
by their own family like Rosemary.
I don't know. I mean, it's crazy to me that that's what happened today. And it shows you how scared they really are of him. Like, actually, at the same time, RFK being approved for the ballot in Michigan as this all happened, which is great timing for him. That's just crazy. crazy timing. But either way, his whole family coming out against him is just absolutely ridiculous. Even if they disagree with their brother, to be this vehemently angry, as you'll see in this clip, is just irrational.
Angry, legitimately angry.
Yeah,
thank
listening.
You, Joe Biden.
Thank you,
he
Joe.
He passed the infrastructure bill. He builds bridges. He has made the working American the hero of every story. Thing? Thank you, Joe Biden.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
He got inflation under control and violent crime yep, is
read
down
the index
in
card.
America under Joe Biden's leadership. He has us thriving again, believing again, behaving like good neighbors again. He stepped into the flames of chaos and turned it into community. Thank you, Joe Biden.
Like if Nancy Pelosi and Susan Collins had a baby.
Yeah, Robert sounds better than her.
We want to make crystal clear our feeling that the best way forward for America is to reelect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to 4 more years.
Ah.
Thank you, Joe Biden.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
How much do we want to make fun of? Like, what's with the, is that a genetic thing? The throat thing that RFK has?
I forget what it's called, but yeah, I guess it runs in the family if she sounds like that a little bit too. This is, I will say, like, especially if you were at the event last week, that's why I was really encouraged to hear what Rand Paul had to say about RFK and how he wants him involved essentially no matter what happens, even if that means bringing him in to the Republican Party whenever, you know, say Trump did win. So I think that's something really interesting. And I think that's why he also didn't deny being asked to be his VP. But, you know, I think Robert is showing why the Democrats are so afraid of him. And I do think Republicans should get off like, oh, he's a green nut. Like, I think he believes in green energy. I don't think that means he wants to use it to money launder.
I mean, the guy has been his entire history environmental. This.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you're a nut job that approves of the insane Green New Deal.
He's
that
also
was just
a guy that called for
launder.
Reparations, though, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying he's perfect, and I don't agree with everything he says, but.
No, I'm with you, though. Like, yeah, a lot of what he says is what's needed. It's essentially 2024 is drain the swamp because Trump did have his opportunity to drain the swamp things seemed to get a little bit more swampier when he was in office. John from Mayfair, Dan is Amir. Does the entire family share one voice box?
Yeah.
No comment, John. I'll put it out there.
But. Yeah, they use like a AI voice generator or something.
Hey, I wanted you guys had a little fun with John Cougar Mellencamp on Nick Hill. And Greg took aim at it.
Yeah, Greg doesn't like, I don't like Mellencamp either, but yeah, he totally, yeah, just runs right off the stage after a couple of people were mad. He talked about politics.
So that's where I have trouble though, because here's the fuller context. And he's talking about a story about God. And that's when he's heckled and ran off a stage. I don't know if it's very political.
Well, I shouldn't have said that because here came that little arthritic finger right in my face. And she went, it's just like you, buddy, to be a smart aleck when I'm talking to Jesus. And then it got real quiet.
No.
Okay, Karen. What do you think I've been doing, you cocksucker?
Goes on and plays a little bit of Jack and Diane, then storms off the stage. And a lot of conservative sources picked this up and was like, hey, John Mellencamp responds to political heckler. But this actually happened on St. Patrick's Day, and it was a drunk heckler responding to something religious he was talking about. So I just want to put that out there. And the reason why I come to Mr. Mellencamp's defense is because he's better Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen sucks. John Mellencamp, the Indiana Bruce Springsteen, is much better.
He's the better Bruce Springsteen. Yeah, I mean, I can come to your defense for that. And it did sound political. But I don't know. I did think maybe they spliced a clip together with him saying something about Biden. Because I did. I feel like I saw something.
Biden? Okay, maybe I'm wrong. But
Yours looked right, but this is the problem with social media now. Because everything's like in these short little handful.
But he also did come back on that. There was a spoken word segment that after he stormed off stage, and he did come back in and play like 9 more songs or something like that.
Okay.
He finished a concert too. Where do you stand on Iran, Anthony? Should Iran have retaliated against Israel in the way that they did after Israel went after the embassy, killing 2 generals?
I don't know. I feel like I sound like a broken record on this issue. I don't love that they did anything. But, you know, I don't think Israel's really been following the rule book totally either. So, like, it's just this whole thing is infuriating to me and how U.S. tax dollars go to both sides. But I will say, for wasting all our money on tax, you know, warfare items, the missile defense system in Israel that was exploding the missiles in real time from Iran. Oh my God, dude, that thing was sick. Sick. It looked like it was from from Avengers or something. Like, shout out everyone. I saw this tweet. It was like, look at everyone. This is, you get to see why we don't have free healthcare.
Well, you got to think that every time a ballistic missile goes up, that's money, you know, out of the pockets of taxpayers, American taxpayers, essentially. But it's a necessary thing because you have an entire, you know, Hamas who refuses, and Iran who backs Hamas, who refuses to back down here. But I was talking to a friend who is a firefighter now, but he's a military contractor, I guess, a former Marine, like pretty badass guy. Like you would probably do movies about this guy. And he's very anti-Israel in this whole situation. His number one priority, he said, I don't want to be sent back to that hellhole, being in the Middle East with military contractual work. Yep. But his thoughts were, you know, I said, what's your final solution then? Because you have two sides here, one side in Israel that seems to want to offer an olive branch, but then actions speak louder than words. And then the other side who just refuses, they swat away the hand anytime it's reached out to, you know, shake. And he suggested that we take the money that we're funding for the, you know, Iron Dome and the defenses and the military actions and put it towards something like a Marshall Plan. In the wake of World War II, in rebuilding Europe, doing the same thing and offering a oasis for those in the Middle East, a place that they can come and have Western culture and essentially prove to them how much better the Western world is than the Sharia law that they live under in these other countries. It's not going to work, though. I hate to say.
Well, I think the problem is hate is so ingrained in both of these cultures by the power structure, and people constantly pull these people away from one another. I mean, it's really not that different from what we see here in America. I mean, from really the war on drugs and really the Black Panther movement in inner cities all the way to today. I mean, they do the same thing and pin our, you know, tribalists ideals and pin our cultures against each other. It's the same idea. And that's, I do think if you let these people really get control of their own land on all sides and let these people just have families and live in the areas and stop falling to these powers that be, I do think this would be a kind of null and void.
Do you think there's ever going to be a world though where a Hamas-led Palestine or any kind of area allows coexistent with Jews? Like that's kind of where
not Hamas-led, but
how do you exile Hamas, Hezbollah, when you have Iran funding them and without going after Iran first and essentially smacking them on the wrist and telling them to stop supporting terrorist organizations?
I blame us a lot for all this, though, because if you go a few years back, I believe it was one of the first things Biden did. Palestine was approved for funding back in, I believe that was 2021. Yeah. And that was before we even exited Afghanistan and gifted them God knows how much money of military equipment, which that's
how much
really
do you place on. Do you place a lot of responsibility on Biden's shoulders for what we're seeing here?
Not necessarily Biden, because all of our presidents have played into this. I mean, I partially blame Trump too. Like I hate our presence in the Middle East. Like I really don't think we need to have an influence there. And I'm not trying to be like cold hearted. Oh, Israel, you're on your own. But I think we are just way too involved. Like look at all we do is make it worse and worse and worse. And Biden put out a statement saying, if Israel responds to Iran, they'll be doing it alone. Like, get out of here. Like, our hands have been all over this. You know, we've molded the entire clay mold, but we just didn't sign it. And that's...
Where were you on the conservative stance last week with the bridge stoppages that should be seen as an act of terrorism, kidnapping?
I think it should be looked into, for sure. Yeah.
And where do you stand with the continued giving a platform? I mean, what was her name? Asra Nussbaum over at USC, who was the valedictorian, taken away from her platform, deplatformed because mm-hmm. of posts on social media that essentially call for, you know, a one government eradication of Israel. Where do you stand on that kind of thing? Like, Will Bunch has a column about it saying that, you know, it's an infringement on the First Amendment right of freedom of speech, but this is hateful shit. Excuse my language, but
yeah.
when you're calling for the eradication of a race, of a religion, I mean, if you have a white guy up there saying all black people should die, you don't allow that. That's completely wrong. It's racist. Yeah. So why is it okay for a Palestinian person to go up there and say all Israelites need to die, or all Jews should die, essentially, reading between the lines?
No, it shouldn't be allowed. I think on any end, like, we shouldn't accept that. And that's part of why you just need all speech, though. Like, I'm not going to ban people being able to say that, because really free speech will die and logic dies in darkness. Like, we have to shine a light on these things. And that's why I'm happy at least this Palestine stuff's getting as much pull as it does, because now at least we see really what's going on. And for people to, from the Holocaust to now, act like all Jewish people should be dead, or vice versa, like, all, you know, the typical like portrayal of a Texas guy who they used to say all wanted Muslims to die. Like, none of that should be okay. Yeah. Like, again, content of your character, not the color of your skin. Like, how many times do we have to go over these things? It's, you know, it's upsetting. It's sad because we all came to this country to be one people and to not fight like this. And no matter what we do, all of the power structure constantly tries to keep us in those little silos. So it's infuriating. Like, this issue to me, again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but it's just, it is the epitome of what's wrong with politics. And I refuse to play into the platitudes. I think
this clip right here really underlines what you're saying, where it's wrong with politics. And I hate to, you know, put it on the other side, because I think there are some conservatives that take what you're saying a little too far, but there's also mm-hmm. those on the left that it's, why can't you acknowledge that what you're saying is wrong? When like I'm going to play a clip here, and I just want your thoughts mm-hmm. here. Why can't this person condemn the actions of these protesters? Take a watch. Oh, I got to unmute it first. Sorry, guys, little technical thing there. Was that not working? Let's see. Oh man, it's not working, is it? All right. Well, here you have a clip from Piers Morgan. I don't know if you saw this, and it was she was asked about a protester that was essentially death to America, and she couldn't condemn that protester saying death to America over and over again, was pressed hard and hard on it. I guess just to underline the point of what you were saying, that there's a really hard line problem in this country that once you have your values, it's extremely hard to back down from. Do you think there is something nefarious at play here? Why are pro-Palestinian protesters not able to condemn things like death to America, Anthony?
That's just, yeah, to me, that's ridiculous, because America is the idea of a group of people together. Like, and you can't, and also like all these leaders that the people, who have been on the left that they have, you know, championed in the past, now they're so critical and acted like, you know, they didn't comply for their own benefit at the time. So it's insane to me, because death to America, it doesn't mean white people. Or it shouldn't. Like, that shouldn't be a direct translation. But yet here we are, we're just belittling Americans to this one little group of, like I said, they just want us to be these country blumpkins from Arkansas that are, you know, wearing cowboy boots and screaming slurs. And that's the box, and death to people like that. When in reality, like, we all are much more complex than that. So it's just, it's absolutely ridiculous. That doesn't matter if anyone says death to America, death to any of these countries. It's like if we said death to Palestine, we don't do that. And we don't defend it, even if we did.
Oh, I did get the clip working. Here you go.
Okay, cool.
Is and actions that have been taken at the post haven't actually been violent. They haven't harmed anyone. And I don't think we should focus.
What do you think about people chanting death to America, as they did in one video clip?
I think that that's just a phrase maybe said by an individual.
Well, no, the whole crowd began joining in.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, yeah. Happen. So this guy said it, and then the whole crowd began chanting it. What would you condemn that?
I'm here to talk about the entire.
Hang on, you're here to answer my questions, actually. Would you condemn what they were chanting, death to America?
I think we should condemn Palestinians actually being killed.
Okay.
I think that, and
that's not the question I'm asking.
Why can't you do both?
I will ask you about Gaza. But on the question I asked you, would you condemn people in America chanting death to America? What do you say?
I don't condemn how people choose to express their rage verbally. I don't condemn that, because at the end of the day, the reason they're saying that is because the U.S. is sending the tax dollars and the weapons that are actually creating death.
Do you support them chanting death to America?
I don't chant that myself, so I don't know why you're trying to trap me in this type of.
I'm asking you to
argument.
Condemn it. You don't want to. So I'm asking. Do you therefore? Should I assume you support them chanting?
Those aren't the chants that I would personally.
So then condemn it.
Sorry. I just want opinion on this. You must surely either condemn it or support it.
No, you don't need to.
You're neutral.
It's not a binary
thing. Terrifying.
How would anyone do? Do you think if they went to Gaza and chanted death to Palestine with Hamas terrorists? Nearby.
Yep. I love that. Just ends
flabbergasted, like, what do I say? No, but this is, and to kind of bring this full circle, because I'm not going to act like I'm this expert on the Middle East. Like, I really don't know everything when it comes to the issue, but I know that it's just people in power that continue to make things worse. And all of these people just should be able to live their lives, have a job, have a community, live together. I mean, people who are from Palestine or from Israel could have a life in harmony. But because of the narratives and the people that are above them, this is what we have. So, but to finalize all that, like, especially with these protests that were nationwide, insane to me, because you know for a fact that these people weren't from Philadelphia, they weren't from Seattle, they weren't from Miami. Like, these people are coming from other places, like, without a doubt, especially when there's these national shutdowns everywhere all at once. Like, it's just insane. And it's disgusting to me. And I'm not trying to say one life is more valuable than the other. But from a local standpoint, if we're going to sit here and protest Palestine, we as Philadelphians should be protesting the Kensington drug market. We should be protesting our kids over, you know, 180 shot in the last year. Like, can we protest these things that bring our city together? And actually, if we want to be equitable and look at things with equality, these are the neighborhoods with the most minority communities by far. So, like, let's help them. Let's bring light to those things. And honestly, I hate the shutting down highways for anything, but if there was a protest for that to try to get people to understand that, I would be more understanding and actually, like, kind of supportive of it. But the fact that this is this national thing with people who have influence on national politics setting up these protests that get to the point of death to America, and then people can't even dismiss it, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
How much do you think it is what Sid says here? Also, they want to be leaders, street cred, and then monetize it versus... Are they fearful that they'll get exiled from the, you know, mind thought group? Like if they venture away just slightly from the radical, almost pro-Hamas narrative, then they're going to be not allowed to protest with their friends anymore. Do you think there's any of that there?
I think a little bit, but especially people like her, I just think you're wearing the rose-colored glasses. Like, you know what I mean? Like, everywhere you look, every comment you hear, you just... you know, death to Israel and anything that justifies that, you're ready to kind of say and double down on. And it's, you know, there's no logic anymore. Like you said, it's just total barbaric kind of thoughts on either end. Really. I understand both have had terrible things and people die, but trying to justify that for any reason, that's where you lose me. You shouldn't be able to justify that for anyone. Like, these are still human beings. No matter what, we're all brothers and sisters, not to sound like religious, but seriously,
don't forget there was cheering on of the paratroopers when it first happened. Like, it's nuts. On the other side of things, let's hear your thoughts from Joe Scarborough on this situation.
We are so much more powerful, so much stronger than we have ever been. Iran, why did Iran do what Iran did, knowing what the outcome was going to be? Because they didn't want to screw with the United States of America. So Donald Trump keeps talking about how America sucks. And before he got elected, America sucked. And then he got elected, suddenly America was great. Then he lost, and now America sucks again. You're voting for a guy like that? You live in the most powerful, greatest country on the face of the earth?
Oh,
and you're voting for a guy that tells you every day that America sucks? What's wrong with you? Who raised you?
Oh, yeah.
What history did you read?
That's it.
Like, where are you from?
Oh, keep it coming.
Because you may claim to be from where I'm from, but you were not raised by the same teachers I was raised by.
Man.
And you don't read. Because you ran. Mike, the facts are clear. And I'm getting tired of saying this to people who claim to be patriotic but hate America because they're always running America down. They're always trashing America. They're always saying America's horrible. Its democracy doesn't work. We need a dictatorship if Donald Trump doesn't win. I'm tired of people running America down. And on Fox News, and I'll just say it, on Fox News, they didn't want to show Donald Trump in trial. So they got three protests and said protests shut down America, basically. This weekend, there were like four.
No, Jesus. This is migrants. Oh, my God.
This All right, is, I'm going to pause it. I'll let you respond. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're obsessed with trials that don't mean anything to anyone. Nobody gives a shit about any of these Trump trials that are all ridiculous, okay? Is he a criminal? Sure, just as much as Joe Biden is. They're all criminals to a certain extent, like we said, the haves and the have-nots in the beginning of the show. But regardless, for you to act like that's some fear-mongering, insane thing that the right and Fox News
I refuse perpetuate. To show the Trump trial.
Dude, we should all be talking about these Palestine protests and what is happening and who is coordinating it. Like that should be a question.
Let's ignore the Golden Gate Bridge being closed in favor for a jury selection in a trial.
To talk about bullshit that nobody cares about. Nobody. Nobody is going to base their vote off of these Trump trials. Nobody. Not one person. Everyone that is at least 1 ounce caring about this, they are so fully in to one side or the other. This trial and the outcome is not going to determine who they're voting for. It's just a joke. It's a joke.
He continues, and he actually responds to what you're saying here.
And a hound dog on top of a hill in New Mexico. And they had their four migrants and a hound dog cam on for hours.
There's right now, I'm looking up the hill, and there are three. I see a coyote. That's a hound dog, Bob. Okay, a hound dog. I mean, this is a world. They give their viewers anything to try to make America look bad. They are obsessed with trashing America when America is stronger, more powerful than ever before. Its economy stronger and more powerful than ever before.
Yeah, so
what do they do? They find a trans athlete in Utah. Our world's coming to an end. Help us, Jesus. The country ain't the country ours raised in. No, it's better. It's stronger. We're more powerful. Our military's more powerful relative to the rest of the world. Our economy is stronger relative to the rest of the world. But you would never know this.
Yeah, look at Willie. Willie's like, when the hell is this going to end? He's like, please, Joe, turn it off, Joe. Turn it off.
Oh, my God.
Because they are fed a steady stream.
He's still staring.
Of hate America.
Yep, looking over his shoulder like, come on, Joe.
First rhetoric, which I suppose is why you have the chairman of the House GOP saying that some of those dupes, backbenchers, are actually clinging to pro-Russian propaganda and spreading it across their districts, across America, and across the House floor.
You think people take that as gospel still? Or do they...
No, I mean, the small group of the base does, like I was saying earlier, same with, you know, people on the right with similar kind of emotional rants. But it's a joke. It's a joke. It's insane how they're going to say that some partisan thing that the Palestine protest that shut down nearly every city. It's not a partisan thing. Like, that's an issue we should talk. We shouldn't not talk about it because it involves.
They completely ignored it. So when that was happening, Fox News was full screen covering it. You switch over to CNN and they have the Trump trial on the big screen, but then they have a picture-in-picture showing images of the bridge. Then you switch over to MSNBC. There's no mention of it whatsoever.
Well, it's racist if we bring it up, according to Mika and Joe and the team over there. And for them to make fun of Fox News all the time is just so ironic. It's the epitome of hypocrisy. And just whataboutism central over there. So it's crazy.
It really is. Joy Reid, my favorite, is always on point. Minnie says, as Mark Levin said, ladies and gentlemen, with all due respect, we've tuned into a freak show. I hope that's referencing Joe Scarborough, not us. But I take freak as a compliment. You know what? And she also said, I like both y'all baseball caps. Yeah, I'm supporting the New World Order here. My buddy Klaus.
The throwback. Did you get that WrestleMania weekend?
No, this was sent by Klaus Schwab himself. Oh, actually, okay. Referencing the new World Order, the actual New World Order. Yeah. No, I got this. My nephew went down to Hollywood, Florida, and Hulk Hogan has a store there. And inside the Hulkamaniac store, there was his hat. So he picked it up for me.
I got a rep to Sixers this week, so thank you, Minnie.
On sports, Sixers we talked about, but Flyers eliminated. Thoughts?
Yeah, I was down there for the last game, and they were in it. They needed the Canadiens to win to stay alive. They couldn't do it. But, I mean, in turn, losing, they kind of eliminated the Penguins as well. So I guess it's a little bit of bittersweet. But, you know, the Flyers shot themselves in the foot. They lost, like, 8 straight after that Islanders game, and they really couldn't pull it back together. But I'll say this. After dealing with a goalie controversy, a goalie getting wrapped up in sexual assault allegations, ripped away from the team, on top of a young core having to like react to that and have young goalie like Arison step up. I mean, I think they did a pretty decent job. Their young core, I mean, they had Poehling and Forster on the first line with TK on Tuesday night, which is that's just unacceptable. Like, I'm not saying those are bad players, but for us to have young guys like that at a first, second line level, this team, for how much fight they put in this year, I would say expect them to, you know, they got a lot of experience, even if they did miss the playoffs. And I think they're in a good spot moving forward here.
Are they respected around the league as a real deal now? Or are they still kind of thought as a flash in the pan?
I mean, I think so. I think anyone would want to help these young guys kind of continue to develop. I could definitely see us going after a veteran. I think Torts sticks around. I know a lot of people were critical of Torts at the end here. I love his energy. I love how he's gotten, you know, the fire lit under these young guys. I know they had that skid, but they're players. Like, you're going to be hot, you're going to be cold, and especially when you're young like that. So I don't know. I think they should run it back with Torts, get a couple more veterans, hopefully get some of these younger guys up to speed a bit more and hopefully ready to make more of an impact next year. But I don't think any Flyers fans should be disappointed. This is a marquee year and a definite turning point when it comes to the future for the team, rather than, you know, they've been kind of treading water for maybe a decade. So this is, I finally feel like they're moving the needle a little bit. So,
And it's good to hear. So you think that it's actually going to be, because when Mike Richards, Jeff Carter were here, I cared, you know, it was a hell of a lot of fun to follow them because they were deep in the playoffs every year. You think we're going to enter into that kind of realm again here in Philadelphia?
I think meaningful hockey is we're on the cusp of that. And mentioning Jeff Carter, shout out to Jeff Carter. He actually retired today. Did announced he? His retirement. Congrats, so yeah, he's been in the league forever.
I can't believe
so.
He's still in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is Mike Richards flamed out only like 3 years after leaving the Flyers?
I love Mike Richards and the stories of Mike Richards and Jeff Carter down at the Jersey Shore. Like that alone, they're legends. So, you know,
I want to talk one important topic again. Actually, before we go there, Eagles draft next week. I guess we'll hit some draft talk before the draft on Wednesday or Thursday. But that's actually next week and it's already here. Real quick thoughts on what you want to see in the first round, Anthony.
I'm praying. I'm not holding my breath, but I'm praying that they go linebacker round 1 or 2. I don't really care.
Even
they
with
might.
Devin White?
I'm sorry.
We signed Devin White.
So even with
his signing, you still want linebacker as a top priority?
I just think we were so exposed at linebacker. I wouldn't be angry. And knowing Howie, I guarantee you we're going to gravitate towards defensive end or defensive tackle, especially after losing Cox as well. So, I mean, honestly, that's probably the safest bet, especially for round one. I could see us going right for an end or a tackle. But no, I would love to get another linebacker. We always plug in someone there. We're like, oh, it'll be fine. I just feel like we always need depth there. And we never, let alone depth, we barely will have a starter at linebacker. And I understand our scheme doesn't always need it, but I think that's
been a new scheme though too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Either way, I just think it's a hole that we consistently get exposed. And I would love for the team to, you know, we should build at least some sort of a repertoire there and have a guy developing and also, you know, signing players at the same time. But Howie being Howie, we'll see how that goes. Especially, I mean, Kelsey left too, so they're going to be looking at offensive line.
Line in the first round. Again, I'm going to be so disappointed. I want a defensive skill player, a playmaker. Give me a cornerback. I mean, our cornerbacks are terrible. Mm-hmm. We got James Bradbury starting one side still. It's not looking good. But, hey, so I, before we get into entertainment, I want to hit one story that you sent over, and that's TikTok and some local ties to TikTok with a billionaire by the name of Jeff Yass, a very strong Republican, and it turns out that he's very instrumental in the founding of TikTok, believe it or not, huh?
Yeah, so he's very much involved with ByteDance, which is the parent company, and it was a Susquehanna venture back in the day, and actually he's referred to as a Republican mega donor in this New York Times write-up, which I don't know. I feel like if you talk to people around him, I know you've had him on with Dom before. It really seems like he's almost more business libertarian kind of centrist in a sense, like not total centrist, but you know what I mean? It seems like he's definitely more diverse than the little silos they try to put him in. But I just thought this was interesting because as this TikTok ban gets more and more debated, it's really Jeff Yass, whether it's, you know, a lot of what we heard last week with Dom and Rand Paul and how they debated it. Every single time I hear TikTok brought up, even nationally, a lot of the times ByteDance or Yass is referred to. So I'm just curious.
So like, when I read this, though, like I have less of like, oh, you know, it turns out that there's an American investor highly involved in the creation of TikTok. So I think a lot of it is, you know, what you're saying is, well, is it how much of it is an actual Chinese communist company? If you have Susquehanna here, who was instrumental in setting up the founder. So what happened? There was a real estate app that Jeff had invested in, and he installed some leadership there that kind of flamed out. But then the leaders from that app went on to found ByteDance. But my concern is actually the opposite. It's like, why the hell is Jeff Yass in bed with Chinese government? And where else is that playing into things? And him being a Republican mega donor, where does that play into things?
Just I mean, a lot of questions. People have said that about most opinions on the right when it comes to supporting TikTok. They're saying, oh, what Chinese super PAC is paying them, et cetera. And actually, there are reports that China and some of the China ties to ByteDance reached out to the U.S. government trying to convince them not to ban it, which I heard ByteDance was not so happy about because they were trying to downplay the relationship with China at this very moment. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to me, especially I wonder how people in Pennsylvania kind of regard an article like this, let alone nationwide.
Well, my question becomes, you know, the Republican effort is to essentially force it into the hands of a American private company rather than the Chinese government.
We got to give them a trial,
But it turns out that there is a hand of American private industry already in TikTok. So how do you fairly eliminate the American private industry that's already involved with it and hand it off to? So for example, you got a Mr. Wonderful and an investor group looking to buy ownership of TikTok. But meanwhile, you have Jeff Yass here, who's a self-made billionaire, I believe. Like, he's allegedly a really good guy investing in a lot of Republican causes, who owns, I don't know if he owns a piece. I don't know what the involvement is here, but it has something to do with this. How do you remove? It's not fair for the government to essentially step in and take away one American and hand it to another American, no?
You can't do that. And that's why if we're going to like sit here and play nice with Facebook, which we've pretty much done until very recently when Zuckerberg finally got screamed at on the floor, which to me, that's not enough anyway. Like if we're threatening to take away this company and restructure them, like there needs to be a trial, which like this needs to, it's a private company. They're thriving. Our government shouldn't be able to just step in and say, okay, we now own half of it or this person owns it and you can't do anything. Like that's just, it's unconstitutional. You can't just do that. Like that precedent in general scares me, not just from a content standpoint, like I've alluded to us getting shut down because the government has so much control. I think something like that just scares me to a point of it gives them almost unlimited. Like I say, they pick winners and losers now. If something like this is accepted, like they are legitimately for sure picking winners and losers and we're allowing it and encouraging it.
It kind of defeats the purpose of private industry.
Yeah.
But my argument
and there's already so much red tape on it. Why would anyone else even want to get involved?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
The red tape comes from, though, a adversarial government. I mean, that's how it's written in the bill is, but again, you have ties here. I want to ask another elephant in the room. This is New York Times, a source that is very left-leaning. And is this a hit piece? Because Jeff is such a strong Republican contributor, is this I'm going to try to muddy the waters of Jeff Yass, try to create him into a villain ahead of the election, so anything that he touches has some ties to the Chinese government or TikTok. Am I falling for the New York Times ruse here, essentially?
No, I mean, I could definitely, especially because Jeff's been mentioned around Trump a good amount here lately with all this TikTok stuff. And because Trump kind of put out a statement similar to what I just said about Facebook with all this going on. So I think it's kind of like, you know, it's anyone that drinks the poison is going to be thrown into the gauntlet. And unfortunately, even though Jeff is a level-headed person, like we both alluded to, you know, the second the word Trump comes out of your mouth or you show up to an event with him or he supports the app that you're, you know, possibly going to have banned on your private equity side, this is just the name of the game. It's unfortunate. I mean, it's been surprising to even see the New York Times put some level-headed articles out there about RFK or Biden, but this is, you know, it's once you get involved with the beast that is Trump, you're marked.
Well, I asked that question because here's another. Says, I'm not going to sign up for your damn $1 a week. Sorry, Times. But here's the headline. Audit questions purchase of a $19,000 lectern by Arkansas governor office. Sarah Huckabee Sanders essentially allegedly went on vacation and charged it to the government. And then when this was found out, she said that it was instead a purchase of a lectern. And then the lectern was found with the receipts and it was less. So there's this whole scandal around the cost of a lectern ordered by Sarah Huckabee Sanders, but this comes, hey, there's a lectern right there. Doesn't look like a $16,000 lectern. I just don't know.
What is that? Yeah.
is this the level of a New York Times story if Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders wasn't involved as a potential VP nominee for Donald Trump?
Hey, I don't put it past any of these slime balls to steal our money and do whatever they want with it. So I don't put this past Sarah. But at the same time, you know, again, I hate doing the whataboutism, but this is like how many Democrats could you, I mean, Bob Menendez, the perfect example, who's like running as a third party now. He was like getting Mercedes and gold from Egyptian government. But, you know, to Fetterman's credit, he's called him out multiple times. But regardless, this is the kind of stuff that like, okay, if we're going to do this, let's do it all around. Like that's what I don't get about Trump in general. If we're going to report on these people and come at them and really try to expose them, then let's do it to all of them. Like, I'm all for that. But people, you know, for some reason, when they're lifelong politicians, we're like, oh, they should be there. They have the experience. We should support them. Like, I don't get it. I really don't get it.
Speaking of gold, good investment by Rob Menendez there. And all those people that get poo-pooed for, you know, actually going with the Fox News, do you want to buy gold kind of?
Yeah. Bob was watching Fox. He was watching, seeing what they said, and then he called the number.
Dude, in the past 6 months, gold is up 22%.
Yeah.
If there's something that you want to, you know, quality. Meanwhile, I'm sitting over here waiting for Bitcoin to half, and I have money in Bitcoin that I'm hoping it skyrockets. Meanwhile, I'm just losing my ass, it seems like.
Get in on Dogecoin. Is that the one that people are buying?
I do have some Dogecoin. That's Elon Musk's, you know, propagation. Hey, you saw Movements, Starland Ballroom. Give me a little bit of review there.
Yeah, you're a Jersey guy. I've never been to Starland Ballroom, which is like Edison, New Jersey area, up north of Newark a bit, like pretty much right near the city, near New York.
Sayreville, yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, just the vibe to me was almost like Electric Factory-esque, like Fillmore-esque, just very big, not even a balcony. Like the back is just one big bar, a couple bathrooms, and then there's a bar on the side in the back as well, and just one giant floor. And those are my favorite kind of venues. And, you know, people say Jersey doesn't get hype. I would say definitely a rowdy crowd. Like there was a fight at one point to the left of me in our crowd, and the lead singer of the band's like, we're a bunch of white boys who whine about our problems. Like, this is the softest show to have a fight at. And then security is like running down people trying to swing at each other at the end of the show. Just, you know, classic. It felt like Real Housewives or something. You know,
the reason why I bring it up, and I saw that you put it on the sheet, and I got excited because I saw Starland Ballroom because there's a lot of wrestling history there.
Yeah.
And there's current wrestling shows. GCW runs out of Starland sometime along with 2300. And,
oh, nice.
When you tell me that it's rowdy, it doesn't surprise me knowing the reputation that the place has. Anything else in the world of entertainment that you want to suggest to people before we get out of here?
I have been catching up. I've finally finished the Patriots Dynasty.
Oh, how was that
series? It was all, I mean, specifically the episodes when you learn more about Aaron Hernandez and kind of, I mean, organizations.
It's a show that's getting a lot of talk now because, you know, Bill Belichick, there's been a lot about him potentially coming to the Eagles, Giants, mm-hmm. some other teams. But there was a documentary that's been talked about that kind of paints a negative picture of Belichick. Is that the one that you're referring to?
Yeah, it's called The Dynasty. It's on Apple TV, and it is really good. But I would say the most interesting thing I took from it was the Hernandez episodes, just because you kind of get inside the mind of Bill, Tom. I mean, really the entire locker room, his friend who was kind of his handler in the locker room, that they kind of keep pulling back that onion, and you learn more and more. And it's just so interesting. I mean, everyone was like scared of him legitimately. And, you know, it's crazy how he got away.
Is that
with
a bad, like you often hear older players come to the defense of Bill, where the younger guys who are the ones that want the friendly coaches, the buddy, buddy coaches, are the ones bitching and moaning about it. When I was at Indiana, a lot of it was Isaiah Thomas coming to the, you know, defense of Bobby Knight versus the newer players over at his new programs, who essentially exiled him because of, well, he was doing some pretty abusive shit. But like that was a coaching style that a lot of players give their best to. Is it a bad thing that kind of coaching style is being vilified, or do you think it's a sign of progress that we're moving away from the, I mean, my coaches were the kind of coaches where you shut up, run a lap if you do something wrong. I feel like that's the kind of Belichick was. It wasn't, I'm going to pat you on the back, do better next time, kid.
I mean, it almost let them seem like if you were good enough, he just let you get away with things. He didn't want to deal with it. Kind of, you know, like he would, you know, that's why I think it was Dion. He had checking on him constantly. But regardless, like whoever it is,
that should be.
Yeah. And you're the coach. You're the coach. You should be the one that has the number one handle. And like you said, like set that precedence of discipline. Don't be like, oh, my buddy vouched for me. And that's like the expectation and I think this is something like, especially from college, if you're good enough, other than if your coach is like Nick Saban, they'll deal with it. And especially on an NFL level, like, you know, these are grown men. They're getting paid. The coaches half the time, they're saying, I don't see myself above them. If they're going to be good and play every Sunday and I have a problem with X, Y, or Z, whatever, I'll let them get away with it.
That's what I kind of want, though, is like I look at Sirianni and I look at Hurts. I think Hurts would be 10 times more productive with a Belichick type coach than he is with a Sirianni coach. Do you agree?
So like someone who's more business oriented and less, rah-rah, like emotional.
I think Jalen Hurts is such a competitor that he sees through Sirianni's bullshit, and he kind of called out to a degree that it's kind of tough playing for multiple coordinators. It's kind of reminds him of college. But Sirianni is the kind of
From Saban. Like,
well, that's the thing is, you come from Saban, you have a hard-nosed coach that gets the hell a lot out of you, and then you have someone like Sirianni who is trying to do the new age coaching. And I think Jalen Hurts is the kind of person that doesn't like that bullshit. He wants to win. Number one priority is winning. And doesn't matter what he physically has to endure through the week, if it gives him a better chance to win, then he wants that. I think that kind of structure would be good for him, no?
Should we pursue Nick Saban? Is that what you're alluding to?
I think we should pursue Bill Belichick. I mean, there's a lot of pushback because Belichick, what happened was, it came out this week that the reason why we didn't sign Belichick is because Lurie and Harry Roseman didn't want to essentially rewrite the entire program for potentially 2 years of Bill Belichick and a potential chance to win a championship. Because when you have Bill Belichick as coach, he also comes in as GM. He wants to rework the roster, and that's not something they wanted to sign up to for just potentially 2 years before the guy retires.
I could see Howie working with Bill. I could see that both of them, I'm sure, have a mutual respect for one another. Like, I could see that working. Yeah.
Do you though? Because I feel like Bill's the kind of guy that once he's told no three times, he's going to say, screw you, nerd, I'm going to do what I want, to Howie Roseman. Similar to Chip Kelly.
Yeah, but they should have enough respect for each other. Like, I don't know, for the record that Howie has and for the success that Bill has shown, you know, that's a team. If they could get over their egos a little bit, I think, you know, maybe they couldn't, but
is that what
I don't know.
Problem is? Oh shit! I just realized I'm past my parking time. Let me re-up my parking time.
What a time! What a time! Know, right? Like, it's what we deal with in the city of.
I'm gonna go out there and have a ticket. I'm gonna be so upset.
It's gonna be parking wars. Dan's gonna be on the next episode, fighting a parking attendant.
Let me go put down a new one just in case. I guess I can do that, right?
Yeah.
It's cheaper when you do it this way, but now I don't know if I'm doing it wrong. Well, I guess it's our sign that we should probably get out of here. So I gotta check on my car and make sure I don't have a ticket.
PPA's towing Dan's car as we speak.
Couple suggestions for you, Anthony, before we head out. Fallout. Don't know if you started watching it. Don't know if you're a fan of the video games. Doesn't follow any story related to the video games, but it's a great end of the world type show. A lot of fun, big world that they're building. Rave ratings. And Invincible, which is the show by Robert Kirkman of Walking Dead. It's a cartoon, almost like an anime, but a superhero. But there's a lot of folds, a lot of wrinkles. J.K. Simmons plays the father. A really, really good show that I started this week that might have more seasons than a video game coming out of it. So I do suggest Invincible on Amazon Prime as well. Anthony, any last things before we get out of here?
I will check out the Fall. I played Fallout back in the day, so I'll check that out at one point. What service is that on? I know I heard.
I think it's on Prime.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, let me make sure before.
But Sixers Knicks Saturday, I'm amped up. We'll get back to you before next week with the draft as well. We'll get some Eagles coverage in here and keep it locked for all of, you know, your crazy election news every day. Kalen Company, Dawn Stensland, Dom Giordano, Riccioli, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day.
And tonight, Anthony, the debut, 7 p.m. We're still on for that?
Yes, 7 o'clock p.m. tonight. Keep it locked to 1210 WPHT YouTube. If you missed the Politics and Pints, it will be up on our YouTube page. So keep an eye out for that. We will post it on social with the podcast as well. So you can watch, listen, whatever is easier for you. If you missed the senator coming through Newtown last week.
Yeah, Rand Paul at the Zlot Community Center. Awesome, awesome event. And we sold out. There were actually people that had to be turned away at the door because they came in trying to get some last minute seats. So get your tickets ahead of time. But if you were one of those people that were turned away and want to see the event, or you're someone that just listens to the Dom Giordano program a lot or 1210 and want to see that Rand Paul Politics and Pints, please go check that out at 1210 WPHD on pretty much all social media.
Hopefully first of many. We're hoping to get more events out there. So yeah, thank you for your support.
Working on some big names as we speak. So let's hope that happens. Finally, Dan Borowski here from the Dom Giordano program checking out. Anthony Dorenzo from everything else. Anthony, have a great day, sir.
Thank you, guys. See ya.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.